Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Jeff Blair has a big brain of sports knowledge, and he's about to headbutt you with it. This is Jeff Blair and the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, I've been told I have to give away Bills tickets. I was going to keep them for myself, but several people in here talked me out of it. So, let's see. What year is it? 2014? So the 2014 caller through at 416-870-0590, star 590. Is that too much, Travis? I'm sorry. The 14th caller through at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590, will win two tickets to see the Buffalo Bills lose to the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, and we'll also get a couple of passes to the Rogers Tap House. And it's brought to you by Rogers, the new Rome-like home program, which Travis McKenzie used when he went down on his vacation in Arizona and gave major props to. Right, Travis? It was great. What was it, $5 a day, and you could do whatever you wanted on your cell phone or on your... Oh, okay. Anyhow. So 14th caller through at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590, gets two tickets to see the Bulls and the Bills and the Browns. You'd probably rather see the Bulls and the Browns. The Bills and the Browns on Sunday in Buffalo. You'll get a couple of passes to the Rogers Tap House as well. I really should have stuck with the 2014th caller, Jordan, shouldn't I?
The Bulls probably have a better passing game.
They probably do. They probably do. Jordan Heath Rawlings, a deputy editor of Sportsnet Magazine, joins us in studio. You can follow him on Twitter at The Game Sheet. We're going to talk about the three NFL games today. It is U.S. Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving if you're listening down in the States. We'll talk about the three NFL games, but also wanted to get Jordan in because Sportsnet Magazine has its Year in Sports issue on newsstands. Now there's a catch with this, right? The newsstand edition has a picture of Sidney Crosby going one-on-one with Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah, that's our Year in Sports. So they're both our awards issues, but right, the newsstand issue also has a 92 pages of the best sports photos of the year, led, of course, with the Sidney Crosby scoring on Henrik Lundqvist in Sochi. They both got the awards. They both got Kyle Lowry in a tux. But if you pick the one up on newsstands, you get all the best pictures from last year.
Right. The subscribers get the...
The subscribers get Kyle Lowry looking dapper on the cover.
He does indeed look dapper. So what was... All right. You guys had debates over this, right? You had debates over who was going to win.
Arguments, debates, those are polite words for them, but yeah.
All right. I'm just going through these things. Most dominating performance, Germany in the World Cup over Brazil. Most intense moment, 1833, third period of the Canadian-U.S. women's hockey game. The graphics, by the way, are tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
In this. Most dominating performance, Madison Bumgarner. What was the award that elicited the greatest amount of debate, Jordan?
You know what I think? I mean, obviously the ones that are for the most dominating and the best team of the year, those ones are always the ones that are the most contested. And I think the toughest call was Germany over Brazil or Seattle over Denver in the Super Bowl, because those two were, most dominating performance. Those were basically both two complete humiliations of two very good teams. And in the end, I think the case was made that we gave it to Germany because they beat Brazil in the World Cup, which, you know, the Super Bowl's on a neutral site. Brazil never loses in Brazil.
Plus, and don't want to get Germany mad.
No.
Bad things happen. I can say that as a German. Or a German background. You never want to get them in. It's just the way it is historically. What other awards here received the had the greatest amount of debate? You've got a picture of Usain Bolt in lederhosen. Where the hell did you get that?
Off his Instagram account. So this was a little tournament that we had where we went through and asked everybody we could think of for who the best athletes on social media were. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's funny because I think when we think of athletes on social media, we often think of Twitter. But the best stuff is on Instagram because you really get a picture of their lives. And it turned out that Usain Bolt and Serena Williams both basically document every minute of their lives and as you would expect, they have amazing times. And so Serena and Usain both have taken selfies with each other at various points. So you're scrolling through one's Instagram account and you come across the other. But yeah, there's just...
The kids are using Instagram. You know that. Us old farts use Twitter. The kids
I just got on Instagram very recently. I went through and found all my contacts and everybody's got a huge head start and I just feel very pathetic.
I'm scared about going on Instagram.
You have to take pictures. You have to show people what you're up to.
I don't want to do that. Shut up, Travis. Travis is making a very rude comment about me. It is Sportsnet Magazine, the year in sports. 102 of the best photos of 2014. It's on newsstands now. Kyle Lowry, as we said, looking dapper. We just had a conversation, and we are going to shift our focus to the NFL in a minute, but we just threw open the phone lines and had a conversation about why the Raptors, just why what the Raptors are doing right now is so much fun. And I'm asking you this because Kyle Lowry's on the cover of the edition that subscribers get. And we had three or four calls from people. You know, I'm not really a basketball fan. I don't really understand the game. I'm a lifelong hockey fan, but I'm really starting to like this team. I don't know if we've seen anything like this in this city for a while, have we?
No, and you know what I think it is? I mean, obviously there's the fact that most of the teams in this city are terrible, and they're obviously not. But I think the really the attractive part of the Raptors is that everybody who's a casual basketball fan or not a basketball fan kind of has it in their head that teams with huge superstars always dominate the NBA, right? And it's the Miami Heat with LeBron James, and it was the Lakers with Kobe Bryant. It's, you know, that you need these number one picks to really win, and you need two or three of these guys to team up and get a championship. And the Raptors are kind of right now the antithesis to all of that. I mean, Kyle Lowry is a fantastic player, but you wouldn't put him on the caliber of some of the true, dominant players in the league. Same with DeMar DeRozan, but they play so well as a team, and there's no, you know, they talked the other night about when Valanciunas had his big night about, like, well, we just decided it was time to feed him because the matchups presented himself. And I think it's really, it's heartening to casual basketball fans to tune in and see a team that shares the ball like that and just, you know, gives it to whoever gets hot.
It'd be a waste. We're joined, by the way, by Jordan Heath Rawlings, and it would be a waste to have you in here and not talk about the NFL because that is in your wheelhouse. We have three games today for your, viewing pleasure. The Bears, 5-6 Bears are at your, Jordan, Detroit Lions, who are 7-4. Not for long. That's at 12:30 in City TV, 4:30 in City. The Philadelphia Eagles against the Dallas Cowboys, 8:30 p.m. in Sportsnet Ontario, the Seattle Seahawks, and the San Francisco 49ers. All these games with playoff implications. A lot of people will be, I know personally, as the Lions fan, you'll be watching that game, Jordan. But the Eagles and Cowboys is intriguing, isn't it? We were talking about this off air. What if Chip Kelly and Mark Sanchez is the... What if it clicks? What if Mark Sanchez is in the... takes the Eagles to the Super Bowl? I don't know.
I would pay a little bit of money for an isolation camera on Rex Ryan as he sits somewhere watches this game today. Can you imagine? I mean, he's just dealt with the basic... He wanted to keep Mike Vick, and Idzik wanted to start Geno Smith, and Ryan basically knows he's going to be fired. Meanwhile, Mark Sanchez, who was discarded despite having taken the Jets to two AFC title games, is now with a coach who has some semblance of what to do with an offense, and all of a sudden, he doesn't look so bad. Now, granted, he was totally outclassed by Aaron Rodgers, but he's not far from alone in that category. But it would be a fantastic story. And I mean, I think all of us who dislike the Dallas Cowboys, just for kind of being the Cowboys, will be pulling for Chip and Mark today.
What is to happen in this Seattle-San Francisco game? I mean, whoever wins this game, you know, again, it's got huge playoff implications. But who needs the win more at 7-4? Do one of these two teams really need this more than the other?
Well, this is the first time they met this season, and this one's in San Francisco, or I guess Santa Clara now, because they have the new stadium. But so the 49ers need it more because it's on their home turf, and they're going to go up to Seattle. And I mean, Arizona is a great team, and we saw what just happened to them when they went up to Seattle. So they've got the 49ers have to be thinking they need to get this one in the bank. And I don't know, you know, it's Seattle looked really vulnerable for a while there, but they got Bobby Wagner back, their middle linebacker back last week, and he just, when he's there calling the signals on defense and sort of diagnosing the play, that's a different defense. They finally look healthy, and I would be terrified of them coming up as the playoffs loom now.
I was going to say, I wonder if maybe the Seahawks at their experience last year, I'm not saying that they would have mailed it in early because I don't think that was the case, but I wonder if that team struck me, and I think it struck a lot of people coming out of the Super Bowl, as a team with a pretty good sense of self and pretty high level of confidence. I wonder if this is just a team that, yeah, you know, we're fine. Tough start, but we're fine. We know what we can do. And it may be that this is a team that just sort of doesn't kick things into gear until the end of November.
It seems like a team with a lot of strong personalities on it. And none of those guys, I think you would ever say, doubt themselves in any way, right? And even Pete Carroll, he has a lot of that identity himself as a coach. And yeah, you don't think you would mail it in, but at the same time, I mean, the Super Bowl hangover is kind of real. It's been, you know, a long physical season, and then you're back at it sooner than anybody else. And to top it off, some of your key guys struggle with injuries, right? And I mean, that's a big thing when you have a defense that's such a tight-knit unit like that. I think that, you know, of all the teams that you can see hosting a playoff game, if they win that division and they have home field advantage, nobody wants, like, even though they've been beaten a couple of times this year, nobody wants to come up there. And Russell Wilson, who's, again, struggled to try to adapt to life without Percy Harvin and all of that, but he's a very even-keeled quarterback, and he is a guy who can take what's there. And I think you sort of saw that last week against the Cardinals, where not a lot was working on offense, but, you know, they ran the ball. Russell Wilson scrambled when he had to, made some short throws. They're not interested in running up the score the way they did in the Super Bowl, but they will beat you.
You know, one of the things I think really happened with Russell Wilson this year as well, that little sort of that blip, that clubhouse or locker room intrigue that we saw, I thought he handled it perfectly.
Yeah.
And managed to keep the attention on the field. And, you know, it's kind of died as a topic of conversation, which doesn't always happen. And with an NFL team, it's remarkable how things that just kind of crop up can become an issue. But very quietly, it's not part of the narrative anymore, which is
just so much of sort of handling the media scrutiny of the NFL, which is just, you know, it's multiplied from many other sports, you know, tenfold, is being able to keep your focus on the field. And you kind of saw the Patriots do it earlier this year too, right? There was all this talk after week four and they were 2-2, and some idiots in the Boston press were asking if they should maybe bench Tom Brady and all this kind of stuff. And you saw Belichick do very similar to what Wilson was doing the last few weeks, is just be like, nope, we're on to Cincinnati. You know, we're on to the next game. I'm not talking about that stuff. You know, we're just going to keep our focus. It's something that really can give a team a lift when they're struggling through inconsistency. You see it in the NHL too, with the really good coaches, you know, guys like Mike Babcock, and who can handle the media. That's why people talk about Babcock coming to Toronto, because he's a guy that can handle that kind of media and just be like, no, it's on the field, it's on the ice. And that's, the Seahawks have been perfect at doing that this year.
Jordan, we appreciate you coming in. Again, there's three football games today, 12:30 p.m. on City, the Bears and the Lions, 4:30 on City, the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys, 8:30 p.m. Sportsnet Ontario, the Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. Jordan Heath Rawlings, deputy editor of Sportsnet, the magazine. The magazine's Year in Sports issue is on newsstands now, 102 of the best photos of 2014. It's got a it's its year end awards issue, and it's a lot of fun. It's got a, I would say, a fair amount of tongue in cheek.
Oh, we had some fun
writing.
Yeah,
it's not just, you know, most valuable basketball player, most valuable football player.
There's very little of that.
There's very little of that. There's a lot more. There's a lot more points of discussion, and we appreciate you joining us, Jordan. Thanks.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Jordan Heath Rawlings is the deputy editor of Sportsnet magazine, and we did give away two Bills tickets. I was only kidding that I was going to keep them for myself. Jeff Blair from Hamilton, Ontario, congratulations. You're going to see the, oh, sorry, Matt Folkard in Ajax, Ontario, congratulations. You are going to see the Bills and the Browns. You were our 14th caller through at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Two tickets to see the Bills and the Browns on Sunday in Buffalo. The weather's going to be lovely. Well, it's probably going to be raining, but I think it's going to be like eight or nine. You also get two passes to the Rogers Tap House as well. And don't forget, if you're a Rogers customer with a Share Everything plan, you can roam like home for just $5 a day when you're in the States. All you have to do is text TRAVEL to 222 to enroll. And thank you very much to our folks at to the folks at Roam Like Home for putting up those two tickets. Actually, I guess we're the folks at Roam Like Home, aren't we, Travis? Team effort. There you go. Speaking of team effort, Chris Johnson's our NHL insider at Sportsnet. See what I did there, Travis? That's called a segue. Huh? You can follow him on Twitter at Reporter Chris. Chris Johnson joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So, Chris, your Toronto Maple Leafs. No, they're not your Toronto Maple Leafs. The Toronto Maple Leafs. Sometimes I think they're yours. The Toronto Maple Leafs. 4-3 losers to Pittsburgh in overtime last night. They beat Tampa, beat Detroit, lost to Pittsburgh last night. I would think, I mean, those are two pretty good periods. I know you've got to play 60 minutes and all that, but, I thought the second and third period were, in terms of defensive responsibility, it might have been 40 of this team's best minutes this year.
Well, and certainly I think when you have the first period they did and falling behind the first minute to rally back, is there's something to that, especially when you get a loser point, as they did in this case. And, you know, really, Jeff, when I look at these last three games since that 9-2 loss to Nashville, there's a lot to like about the way the Leafs have responded, because they played three of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference and come away with 5 of 6 points out of those games. And really, I think we've seen a much higher level of commitment in that time. And that includes last night, where, you know, they did have a bit of a stumble out of the gate, but, you know, managed to right the ship and, you know, I think really do a lot of what they've been trying to do here for the last little bit.
You know, this, I'm not going to trace it all the way back to Salutegate. But you know what? I've had more than one person around the team, or, you know, people involved in broadcasts, tell me they think there's something different about this team right now than there was before that incident. Hey, Mark Osborne on Leafs Nation pregame and postgame yesterday, and on this show, was talking about how, you know, he going back to Dion Phaneuf's news conference after that Detroit game, where they brought him into the interview room. And, I mean, I watched part of that interview. I wasn't there, but I watched part of it. Seldom have I seen Dion Phaneuf look that engaged, look that relaxed, look that in command of a situation. He always seems to me to be a type of guy who looks like his back's against the wall when he's dealing with the media. I don't know. Do you think that maybe something happened there? That maybe that was almost like a come-to-Jesus moment for the leadership core of that team?
Well, if it was, I mean, it's purely coincidental. You know,
sure.
That really... You know, I know for a fact came out of a lot of frustration from the players with what was going on, I think partially with their play, but a lot of the way they were perceived, that they were being, you know, covered by the media and being received by the fans. And, you know, that was just a frustration thing that happened. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, what it did is put a lot more attention on them, if that's even possible. And, you know, I think a little bit of pressure. And you know, you have to like, at least with on the ice, what you've seen in the response there. And you know, perhaps there is a bit of an us-against-the-world mentality that came out of that entire thing, because, you know, what really the coaching staff has tried to do, and you know, to me, that's all wrapped in with the 6-2 loss in Buffalo and the 9-2 loss in Nashville, because the salute gate, so to speak, was the next game, is, you know, the coaching staff started talking about the process rather than the results. And I think that's why, you know, specifically the last night's game, even though they didn't get the win, they still like the process, because they are limiting the amount of chances they're allowing against. And, you know, I don't think that was Jonathan Bernier's best effort, but if the Leafs can hold, you know, high-powered teams like Pittsburgh to 26 shots, I like their chances most nights with him in net.
Chris Johnson joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So Jonathan Bernier started last night instead of James Reimer, despite the fact that James Reimer's played pretty well against Pittsburgh. Jonathan Bernier played well. There was some criticism of him on the game-winning goal for being a little too deep in the net, but I think we can agree that Jonathan Bernier has very much looked like a number one goaltender in these past three games. So, Chris, I've got to ask you, is that debate now laid to rest?
Until the next series of bad losses, I suppose it is. I mean, it's clear that you know, coming out of last season, and that was the thought process, and, you know, it's certainly, we could term it his to lose. I mean, if he plays, you know, for the most part, well enough over, you know, a stretch of games, it is going to be his. And, you know, you get a light week like this one where The Leafs played last Saturday, had a couple days off till last night's game, and then don't play again till Saturday. I mean, you're going to see Bernier get a run of starts. But, you know, as it is right now with the number of back-to-backs, you know, Reimer will be mostly getting those. And you know, again, unless you see any real bad struggles, you know, I think it is, you know, John and Bernier's job at this point. But, you know, this isn't a team that can afford to just, you know, have a label and stick with it. They're going to be in tough to make the playoffs. We all know that. And if he struggles at all, they'll go back to Reimer, I'm sure, for a prolonged stretch of games.
Do you think Randy keeps Lupul, Booth, and Trevor Smith together?
Not over too long a time. You know, I thought by the end of last night's game, quite honestly, heading into that you'd see Lupul and Kadri back together. But, of course, you know, that wasn't even a possibility with how well Santorelli and Komarov played on Kadri's wings. You know, that was, you know, most effective line last night. It was shown on the score sheet, but also the amount of ice time they were getting and some double shifting type of opportunities. So, you know, that's probably the end game, I think, because, you know, Kadri and Lupul have shown that they can, you know, really be effective together, especially early in the year. And I think, you know, offensively, they bring, you know, something analyzing for a long beyond the Leafs' first line right now. But, you know, as it's, you know, as the way it kind of played out last.
Phone line dropped. You knew that was happening. You could start to detect, couldn't you? You could start to detect that the line was kind of petering out there a bit. It started to get a little broken up. I was hoping we could make it through. I was hanging on like a thread that we could make it through before the phone line fell. Chris Johnson's back. So continue your thought, Chris.
Where was I? I don't know where it dropped.
No, we were talking about the line brain
is
fart.
Smith, Lupul.
Yeah, exactly. Smith, Lupul. Booth. Exactly. Smith, Lupul, and Booth. And you were suggesting that at some point you would think that Randy would probably try to hook up Lupul and Kadri again, even though the line that Kadri's on right now. And you're right. It's probably been their most consistent line for the past three games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the likely end game here, but I would think, you know, come Saturday when the Capitals show up, you'll see the same formations just because, you know, I think it was effective enough last night, and I really think they want to ease both Joffrey Lupul and especially David Booth back in with, you know, maybe more limited minutes. And, you know, having those guys down the lineup, and again, I look more specifically at Lupul because we know what he can do, and he hasn't had nearly as long a layoff as David Booth has, is, you know, if something isn't working in game, it's kind of, you know, it's everyone basically above them in the lineup knows that they can be replaced by Lupul if, you know, things aren't working out. And, you know, my guess is that's sort of how it's going to organically happen, either that or an injury, just, you know, by what happens in the NHL. But, you know, right now I think that they're comfortable having that as a fourth line because they were able to spread the forward minutes around a lot more. And as we know, that's been a real goal of this coaching staff this season.
Hey Chris, we've always looked at Leo Komarov as being a gritty guy, you know, a guy who's going to get in the greasy areas. And he's certainly done that. He's been a presence whenever he's on the ice. What do the Leafs coaching staff think his offensive upside is? Is there an offensive upside there?
I don't think there's too much of one, to be honest, and I don't believe they do either. I mean, right now he's had what we would call a string of fairly good luck. He's scoring he doesn't generate a lot of shots, and he's been scoring, you know, certainly more than was expected. I mean, we need only look to the 247 games he played in Russia in the KHL, which, you know, isn't the same level of competition as the NHL, and he only ever had two-goal games over there. So, you know, for him to get one in the NHL last night was, you know, a real, you know, for a guy that works hard, it's a real bonus, and it's something I know his teammates would like to see. But, you know, there's no real thought that I can see in having him play further up the lineup or on the power play or anything of that nature. I think right now they're comfortable with him as a guy who helps drive possession and is tough to play against, and he's a physical player. But, you know, I think, you know, he's really a third liner, and you know, when he contributes offensively, as we've seen this season with a lot of assists and the couple goals he scored last night, I mean, that's purely bonus for a team like the Leafs, because, you know, I don't think he was signed at all for his offensive abilities, and I wouldn't expect that he'll be able to keep this up over the course of a long season. He's just had a really good start and, you know, maybe a bit of a lucky start as well on the offensive side of things.
Hey, Chris, we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much. We're going to let you scoot.
Okay, Jeff, thank you.
Chris Johnson, our NHL insider in Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter, at Reporter Chris. You'll hear the important stuff first from him. Hockey Central at noon, by the way, is on tap just around the corner. It'll be Millard, Kiprios, and McLean. 12:15, Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets broadcaster, will join the guys. At 12:45, Mitchell Marner, forward with the London Knights, will be on. So again, that's Hockey Central at noon. Millard, Kiprios, and McLean at noon. The Arizona Diamondbacks did a nice bit of business yesterday, signing the best Cuban free agent of this offseason, an outfielder, Yasmani Thomas, to a contract. A lot of teams interested in him, a lot of teams following his workouts. The Diamondbacks eventually gave him a six-year, $68.5 million deal. Interesting because the Diamondbacks followed the Blue Jays for the final, I want to say the final 4 weeks of the regular season, maybe more than any other team in the major league. And they had John Vanderwall assigned to the team. And what they were looking at mostly was Melky Cabrera. And you know, I had a couple of conversations with John Vanderwall about this. He's their major league scout, one of their major league scouts, I should say. And the Diamondbacks were really considering making a serious run at Melky Cabrera. I don't know if this necessarily precludes that. I do know that there were a lot of teams that were involved in this pursuit. Interesting because 6 years, $68 million is actually a little less than what a lot of people thought he would get. Rusney Castillo got 7 years and $72.5 million in the Red Sox. A lot of people thought that Yasmani Thomas would get close to $100 million. And it's an interesting signing because the Diamondbacks, everybody knew they were one of the teams that were looking at this guy, but they were kind of considered to be a team in the periphery. They weren't considered to be, at no point were they considered to be the front runner for this guy's services. Nonetheless, the Arizona Diamondbacks have signed him. The man who broke the story is Jesse Sanchez at MLB.com. And Jesse Sanchez will join us. We're going to talk a little baseball when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Millard, Kiprios, and McLean will have Jody Shelley on Hockey Central at noon, immediately following this show. And then Tim and Sid, or at least it'll take over from there right up to Bob McCown. Get you through the day. Mitchell Marner, forward with the London Knights, will also join Hockey Central 12:45. So there you go. Jody Shelley 12:15. Mitchell Marner 12:45. I'm going to shift our focus to Major League Baseball right now. The Arizona Diamondbacks. I think it's safe to say surprising a lot of people, signing the year's high-profile Cuban free agent, Yasmani Tomas, to a six-year, $68.5 million deal yesterday. A little less than a lot of people thought he would get. Falls short of Rusney Castillo's 7-year, $72.5 million deal with the Red Sox, and actually matches the free agent deal that Jose Abreu signed with the Chicago White Sox. And, of course, Jose Abreu went on to become Rookie of the Year in the American League. Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com broke the story of the signing, and Jesse Sanchez joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jesse, how you doing, man? Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Jeff. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving, man.
Are you surprised that the Diamondbacks ended up getting Tomas?
You know what? I am. I guess the rumors around the industry and the belief was it'd be someone like the Philadelphia Phillies, somebody like the Giants, because there was this belief he was seeking $15 million annually for 6 or 7 years. So mm-hmm. there's only a few teams who can really afford to do that and who can afford the money, who can afford the risk. But I think after evaluating the market, I think what Tomas Camp saw, realized, is they weren't going to get that. So the second best option, I mean, this is just my take on it, mm-hmm. is they got a pretty good deal with the D-backs. And it's my understanding there's an opt-out in there also, which is very important. So if he eventually wants to get to that $100 million plateau or whatever he's seeking, if he opts out after 4 years, he's had a solid 4 years, he's still just 27, 28. He can be a prime hitter hitting the market again. I think that was a big reason why. But, yeah, I'm definitely surprised it's the D-back.
Jesse Sanchez joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How good is he? I mean, I know we haven't seen him play in the majors yet, but what's the buzz on him compared to the buzz on Castillo and Jose Abreu? I guess the two most recent examples we have of high-profile Cuban position players.
Well, Jose Abreu was a pretty neat case. I think the first person to really kind of open some eyes again was Yoenis Cespedes. There were people curious if he could handle playing in the major leagues, how his athleticism would translate. Obviously, he's done well. In Jose Abreu's case, he had this reputation of having success in international tournaments. He had success in Cuban League. I mean, he was a pro. I mean, there were still obviously some criticism. There were some people wondering if he could hit the inside fastball, or if people were nitpicking at his game. He was a special case. I think with Tomas, he just turned 24 a couple weeks ago. He's just as with all Cuban players, he's a risk. He hasn't played against the highest level Major League Baseball. He hasn't faced the highest level Triple A baseball. So what really I think people are buying into is the potential, his athleticism, his raw power. He has extremely great raw power. I think if he can harness that raw power and get it game and use it in games, he can be a 30 home run guy. You know, if you have a 30 home run guy who's locked up for 6 years or 4 years minimum, you know, that's a pretty good sign. Obviously, there's still people going to be curious if he can handle the pitching. There's some questions about if he's a good enough corner outfielder. I think all those will be answered spring training going forward. I mean, I still do believe he needs some seasoning. He hasn't played in a game since April or May. So he needs time. I mean, I wouldn't even – somebody mentioned or asked me if he could play winter ball, and I'm not sure that's a bad idea. I'm not sure if the D-backs would want that, but I just know this guy needs to see live action.
Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jesse broke the story yesterday, the Arizona Diamondbacks signing Yasmani Tomas, Cuban free agent outfielder, to a six-year, $68.5 million deal. Jesse, I know that the Arizona Diamondbacks were really interested in Melky Cabrera. They had John Vanderwall, their scout, following the Jays an awful lot down the stretch. I know they did a lot of due diligence in Melky Cabrera in the first couple of weeks of the offseason. A lot of people thought they were interested in, and they would be one of the teams that would really be interested in him. Would signing Yasmani Tomas take them out of the market for Melky Cabrera, do you think?
Well, as you know, Jeff, being around baseball, as long as you have anything possible in this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anything can happen, and we can't just automatically assume one move, you know, eliminates these other moves. But what we know for certain right now is the D-backs do have a crowded outfield. They're going to have Tomas. They're going to have A.J. Pollock in center field. Mark Trumbull is going to be in the outfield. They have Cody Ross is coming back, mm-hmm. another player. Amir Ciarte is going to be there. So, if anything, I'm not sure if they want to add outfielders. Again, we're still in the middle of the off season now. Winter meetings are coming up in a couple weeks. Anything can happen. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they make some shifts, maybe move some guys for depth or another position. But it seems like they're set in the outfield. That said, anything can happen, but I don't think it's unreasonable to think Tomas will be in left field or right field, Trumbo in right field or left field, and Pollock in center. And I think a guy like Melky has to play every day. So I'm just not sure if that's the fit.
One of the teams that you and a lot of people thought would be really interested in Tomas were the San Francisco Giants. I mean, they have to replace Pablo Sandoval. I think they were probably looking at doing a few things offensively anyhow in the offseason. Where do you see them going right now? Because they've kind of quietly emerged as one of the more interesting teams to follow this offseason.
You know, it would be interesting, and you're exactly right. I think there were some links for the Giants and Tomas partly. I mean, not completely, partly because Jay Alou, Tomas's agent, is the nephew of Felipe Alou, who, as you know, is a special assistant there. You know, the Alou's families are a really famous family in baseball, and I think there was some connection there. I think the Giants were looking towards Tomas as a potential third baseman in addition to outfield. I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe they were focusing on Sandoval. I mean, that's just speculation at this point. And I'm pretty sure Tomas wanted a deal. I mean, he wanted to get the ball rolling. Remember, he'd become eligible to sign in September. So what normally happens with Cuban players, they'll become eligible, and not long after that, they're going to sign a deal almost immediately. I mean, if you look at Castillo, the same thing happened over the summer. He became eligible, signed with the Red Sox with a month left in the season. So I'm not exactly sure that impact directly the Giants. I mean, they are definitely one of the most interesting teams out there. I mean, you look at all the World Series championships in the past 5 years, that hole at third base is, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. How are they going to fill that? But I feel like they can. Maybe they can potentially grab platoon players there. I think people talk about, as good as Sandoval was in October, he wasn't always the same guy during the season. So we remember, you know, the World Series hero, which is a pretty good legacy to be remembered by. But I'm not sure. I think they could find a way to fill in his production during the season with a free agent acquisition, or maybe even just platoon some guys over there. I mean, they usually just find a way to make it work.
Jesse, we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
You be well. That is Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com. He does a terrific job. He broke the signing of Yasmani Tomas, 6 years, $68.5 million by the Arizona Diamondbacks. A lot of people thinking you'd get seven, maybe $100 million. Essentially, he settled for the same contract, settled $68.5 million. A lot of people would settle for that. He took the same contract that Jose Abreu got, and as you heard Jesse Sanchez say, there is apparently an opt-out clause in that deal, which would probably explain why he may have taken a little less overall money. But as I just sent out on Twitter, I know that the Arizona Diamondbacks were a team that was really interested in Melky Cabrera, and I've got to think that this takes them out of the picture. And, you know, it's like with every day that passes, you begin to wonder whether or not Melky Cabrera moves closer and closer to re-signing with the Blue Jays. The market for he and Nelson Cruz hasn't really taken off, and perhaps that's as much a product of their agent slow playing the market as anything. But with each day that goes by, I just get a sense that the possibility of Melky Cabrera returning to this team increases, especially if he's not going to get a market-busting contract. So we appreciate Jesse Sanchez joining us. If you're one of those people who thinks that, or one of those people who really wants to see Melky Cabrera back with this team, then yesterday with the Arizona Diamondbacks signing Yasmani Tomas, yesterday was one of the best days of the offseason for you. That's it for us today. We've got Hockey Central at noon next. Don't forget, three football games, 12:30 in City TV, the Bears and the Lions, 4:30, the Eagles and the Cowboys, 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, the Seattle Seahawks, and the 49ers. That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.